Happiness can be a tough thing for many of us, dear listeners. Trying to figure out how to get it or how to keep it over time can be quite confusing. Welcome to Jones and Wolf, a monthly audio fiction podcast featuring original music. This month's story, The Happiness Problem, is about a man who believes his compulsion for honesty, his independent streak, and his feelings about his robot brother are what prevent him from being happy. Enjoy. If you're wondering what it's like being the only free-thinking, honest person in your entire family, well, I can put it succinctly. It's awful. But if you want the longer, more descriptive answer, I'll give you an example. Take what happened last Tuesday, for instance, when my family and I finally sat down to dinner at my parents' house, and Alberto, my brother, if you even want to call him that, put his hand on Reina's knee, the woman who called herself his wife, which was an abomination as far as I was concerned, and said they had an announcement. "What is it, dear?" my mother said, all smiles. You could have told that woman that the button had been pressed, the nuclear warheads were on their way, the destruction of human civilization was imminent, and she would have looked at you without losing 1 ounce of her Midwest cheer, served you up another heaping spoonful of scalloped potatoes and said, "Well now, let's just try to look on the bright side." "Reina's pregnant," my brother said, shaking with excitement, the both of them teary-eyed. "We're going to have a baby." My parents, going along with the farce as they had been for nearly 30 years now, leapt up and hugged them, beside themselves with happiness. "A toast," my father said, pulling out his 100-year-old brandy from the liquor cabinet, a bottle that was easily worth 5 figures, ready to waste it on this charade, which was more proof of how delusional he'd become over the years. "Let's drink to the new addition to our family." But I wasn't going to drink any brandy, or participate in any toast, or even look in Alberto and Reina's direction. I'd had enough of our family's collective delusion, the make-believe that I'd been forced to participate in since birth. I'd told Serena as much before we broke up last month, that the pressure of pretending like we all loved each other, that something wasn't horribly unnatural and wrong, was crushing me. "This is disgusting," I said finally, standing up from the table and walking out, not even pausing to look at the effect that had on everyone. I was over and done with the theatrics, if you get what I'm saying. So I got in my truck and headed straight to one of the casinos in my queue and plopped down in front of the digital slots that needed fixing. I wasn't even scheduled to be there until Monday, but tinkering with the slot machines was better than dwelling on whatever twisted fantasy Alberto and Reina had cooked up. Pregnancy? Were you fucking kidding me? What was next? Were they going to show up with doctored ultrasounds? Were we going to have to go to the hospital with them and meet with doctors and pretend like we were all excited when it was abundantly clear that Reina and Alberto had been lying the entire time? "It's his programming," I thought, taking the kind of deep breaths Serena had recommended when we were still together, trying to calm down. "Alberto can't help it. He's just doing what he thinks is expected of him." As is so often the case, the events of my life were set in motion long before I had any conscious say in the matter. So before you make up your mind that I'm some kind of heartless monster, let me be clear. Reina wasn't pregnant. It simply wasn't possible. Because my brother wasn't a human being. He was a machine. A Sibbot, they called them. Artificially intelligent brothers and sisters that grew over time the same way a human might, designed to aid the cognitive and social development of only children. My parents, being the genius university social psychology professors they were, decided to be at the vanguard of that movement after my mother's cesarean and their realization that I would be her only naturally born child. The Sibbot movement, however, didn't take off the way they expected. By the time I was 8, almost all major manufacturers of Sibbots had discontinued their offerings, opting for safer products like labor bots and robot vacuums instead. There were reasons for this. Tragedies like the one in Baton Rouge, for example, where a 4-year-old boy's robot sister had nearly ripped his arm off in the midst of some roughhousing. There were also stories of incestual Sibbot relationships, by far the most taboo mechanophilia, or robot love, as some people called it, for which the manufacturers received most of the blame. And then finally, there were the countless instances of parents falling hopelessly enamored with their robot children, growing to prefer them over their own offspring, gradually ignoring, or in some cases, despising their naturally born children more and more, until it was clear that the developmental cost of having a SIBbot far outweighed any social benefits an only child might gain from a robot sibling. I, for one, could relate to that, having been compared against Alberto's relentless optimism and sunny disposition for years, for which I was no match, being one of the few free thinkers left in the country, unafraid of the consequences for offering my honest and open criticism, no matter how cynical it might appear. There was this time in the sixth grade when I got in trouble for pointing out that my history teacher was a complete fraud, I told Serena when we were still together. Serena was a floor manager in one of the casinos I serviced, and the 6 months I spent with her was the closest I'd ever come to experiencing true love. And he was, too. A fraud, I mean. He would just make up answers to our questions, filling in the gaps with his imagination. He told us once that the first instance of the singularity hadn't been the spark of embodied consciousness in machines, but the advent of social media networks. Can you imagine filling children's heads with such trash? Of course, I had to set him straight. It was my responsibility as a member of that class. But do you know what my mother said to me when I was stewing on his comments, drafting and redrafting a letter to the school superintendent? She said, "Dear, don't you think you could let it go? Maybe not dwell so much on the negative?" But I knew what she was really saying. She was asking why I couldn't be more like Alberto, a machine. As if I could just reprogram myself to be a moronic optimist like him and then poof, all my problems would just disappear in a cloud of artificial happiness. But I think that was when Serena had already started to drift away, because her eyes had gone blank, as they often did when I got worked up like that, and I could tell she was starting to imagine a different future for herself. A future, maybe, where she was surrounded by more delusional optimistic types, like Alberto, instead of free-thinking, super honest men like me. The next time the family was all together was for my father's 63rd birthday, 4 months after Alberto and Reina had made their announcement. I had sworn I wasn't going to go until the last minute when the guilt became too overwhelming and I found myself putting on a button-down shirt and driving over in my truck as if my filial duty had kicked in and I had no choice other than to obey. To be honest, I was disappointed I hadn't shown more commitment to terminating my interactions with my parents, who had clearly fallen so in love with my robot brother that they had no perspective left on what was real and what wasn't. The thing is, I pride myself on independence, so when I catch myself doing things compulsively or not following through on promises I make to myself, it really gets me down. For all the times I upset Serena by pointing out the flaws in her friends after a dinner party, or explaining why I thought the jokes in a movie we were watching were actually unfunny, I always kept my word, and I told her when we first started dating that I was the kind of guy who was always 100% honest. That was definitely a promise I kept. Anyway, Alberto and Reina were already in my parents' living room when I arrived, and as soon as I saw Reina, I burst out laughing. "Oh God," I said, looking at her stomach, which was unmistakably protruding from her sundress. "What is that? A prosthetic? You two are really going all out with this, aren't you? I guess I'm almost impressed with your commitment." Well, impressed isn't the right word. More like dumbstruck and nauseated. Is there a word for that feeling? Reina had been smiling, sharing some anecdote with my mother prior to me walking in. But when she saw me, she froze. "Hey, bro," Alberto said, trying to compensate for me like he always did, with loud, booming enthusiasm. "Come check out what Dad installed on the deck." "Please don't call me bro," I said. "I hate that." My parents exchanged a look. It must have been a record for me. I hadn't been there for longer than a minute, and I'd already ruined the day. "Look," I said, remembering what Serena had taught me about improving my communication, about not being so terribly blunt. "I should choose my words more carefully, but I almost didn't come over today if you want to know the truth because, well..." I stopped right then, because Reina's sundress had little slits on both sides, and I could see the edges of her stomach. There was no prosthetic or padding there at all. It was her flesh, 100%. Jesus, I said, you really are pregnant. Of course I am, she said. Who's the father then? It wasn't long after that Raina was in tears, and everyone else in my family was around her trying to console her. He's broken, she screamed, looking at me like I was some monster, my punishment once again for being honest. Something is seriously not right with him. Alberto was whispering to her. I couldn't hear him perfectly, but I think what he said was, it's not his fault. He can't help it. Oh God, she continued, wailing. When are you going to tell him? She said between tears, looking at my parents and Alberto. I can't live like this anymore. I can't. Mechanophilia was nothing new. There were stories as old as a century ago of guys getting caught fucking their cars, or women attempting to legally wed helicopters they'd formed intimate emotional connections with. Back then, these were niche events. After the singularity, though, love stories between machines and humans had become decidedly more mainstream. When you stop to think about it, it was shocking how many people had opted for long-term relationships with robots over other human beings. It was just easier for a lot of people, I think, to commit to machines. To hear my 6th grade history teacher tell it, this trend had started decades earlier, when people formed their most intimate bonds with touchscreen phones. But like I said, he was a complete fraud. Nevertheless, there were tons of people now like Raina who had fallen in love with grown-up SIP bots. But Raina was also unique in how far she'd taken the charade of their relationship, and how insistent she was that Alberto was actually a human being. I think it's sweet, Serena told me once, after I'd been complaining about them for hours. I see people every day who show more commitment to the slot machines you repair than they ever would to another person. If those slot machines could reach back and give them a hug, who knows how happy it might make them. But the whole thing is predicated on lies, I said. If Raina would just come out and say, I'm in love with the robot, it wouldn't bother me. But the fact that she, and now my parents, all pretend that Alberto is a real person, the dishonesty drives me insane. If it makes them happy, what's so wrong about it? And then, a while later, after things had gone quiet between us, Serena said, why do you have such a problem with their happiness? No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't make Serena understand. The truth was, I just didn't think there was any amount of happiness worth lying for. Facing facts and being honest were far too important to me. Maybe that's why Serena left me. She just couldn't handle someone who grabbed others by their shirt collars and pointed to all the unfortunate things in life they'd rather not see. After leaving my father's party, I was in bad shape. Despite being true to my principles, I felt so run down that I called Serena, even though I promised I wouldn't contact her after we broke up. I don't know, I just needed someone to listen at that moment. Someone who wasn't convinced that I was an absolute monster. When I tried Serena's number, though, it was disconnected. That pushed me over the edge. The fact that she'd changed her number and hadn't told me. At that moment, I felt truly alone in the world. So I wound up doing something I hadn't done much since I was a teenager. I pulled out a razor blade and started cutting. Just a few thin lines in my forearm, like I'd done from time to time when I was a kid. Except I cut deeper than I used to. I wasn't trying to permanently harm myself or anything, but the way I felt, I needed a deeper release. After the first couple cuts, I really pressed the razor hard into my forearm. And once I'd finished and taken a long deep breath, I noticed something strange. There appeared to be a blinking light inside my arm that was flashing beneath the streams of blood, which were light and watery, despite how deep I'd cut. I wiped the fluid away with my shirt sleeve and pried with the razor to get a deeper look in my forearm. What I saw was truly shocking. There were tubes there and what looked like embedded microchips. An interior not made of flesh and bone, but silicon and steel. The innards of a machine. This is impossible, I said out loud. I'm a man. I threw my razor across the room and started pacing. I covered my arm with a towel. I was shaking my head and trembling from head to toe. A man, I said again, an important man, the last free-thinking, honest man in the entire world. The Happiness Problem was written and narrated by me, Anthony Jones. The music was done by Joel Wolf. If you enjoyed this story, take a moment and rate it wherever you listen to podcasts, or share it with someone you think would like it. As always, if you'd like to get in touch, you can reach us at jonesandwolf@gmail.com. That's jonesandwolf@gmail.com. Joel and I will be back next month with another story. Until then, my ephemeral friends, thanks for listening.